Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. Today we're going to talk about the natural history of blood pressure and its relation to cardiovascular disease. In most populations, systolic blood pressure rises with increasing age, while diastolic pressure reaches its peak in about the fifth decade and then begins to fall. These features seem to be a reflection of the slow decrease in the compliance of the large capacitance blood vessels. Among untreated patients who are less than 65, there's a progressive increase in the risk of stroke and coronary artery disease as blood pressure increases. The risk is greater for each increment in systolic blood pressure than it is for the equivalent increase in diastolic pressure. So for people over the age of 65, the risk continues to increase with rising blood pressure. However, a reversal occurs with diastolic pressure, such that the lower the diastolic pressure at a given systolic pressure, the greater the risk of stroke or heart disease. This is presumably because of increased pulse pressure. Among participants less than 65 years of age who undergo studies, increases in the systolic blood pressure were linearly related to increases in cardiovascular and all-cause mortality at all diastolic blood pressure levels. By comparison, the correlation between diastolic blood pressure and mortality in this particular age group was shaped like a hockey stick. So an increasing number of trials have provided evidence that antihypertensive therapy to attain blood pressure control provides some degree of cardiovascular protection, but it's not a home run. Optimum level of control may vary across certain patient populations based on age and gender and ethnicity, perhaps lifestyle. The benefits of increasingly intensive therapy need to be weighed against the potential increase in the incidence of side effects from these different drugs. It's also important to understand one particular thing about the way blood pressure is measured in studies. When we take blood pressure in the office, most of us are using oscillatory methods, using a blood pressure cuff and all the things that we learned in medical school. However, when these studies are done, they tend to use automated blood pressure devices that average multiple consecutive readings with the patient resting alone in a room. In general, systolic blood pressure readings are 5 to 10 millimeters of mercury lower with these automated readings than they are with the manual oscillatory measurements. So this week, Marx found a poem. It is taken from the New England Journal, and it asks the question, is there a net benefit to systolic blood pressure target of 120 milligrams compared to 140 milligrams of mercury in patients without diabetes but who are at high risk of cardiovascular disease? Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, this was a really interesting study, and there's a lot to talk about here. So this is going to be a little bit longer podcast than average. I think it was the longest poem I've ever written in over 20 years. Previous trials, as you said, of more aggressive targets. And these, you know, the ACCORD trial did this. They tried to randomize people to 120 versus 140. They found no difference. Now, that was in diabetic patients. But, you know, other trials have tried comparing titer with looser control, and basically anything below 140, there was really very little evidence for that till now. And so that's why it's so important to look at this trial. So they identified patients 50 and older. They all had a baseline blood pressure systolic between 130 and 180, and they had no history of diabetes or stroke, but they were all at significantly increased risk because they had known cardiovascular disease or chronic kidney disease, or they had a 10-year cardiovascular risk of 15% or more, which is pretty high, or they were over 75. So this was a really a very high-risk group for cardiovascular disease, but no diabetics. Only the outcome assessors were masked at the treatment assignment. Otherwise, it was an open trial, so physicians and patients knew what they were taking. They don't tell us about how they concealed allocation to get into the groups, which is kind of surprising. But if you do look at the groups, they look like they were pretty balanced at the start of the trial. There were a total of 9,361 patients. They got randomized to either a target of 120 or 140. So really very simple trial. The average age was about 68 years. Over half were current or former smokers. It was a fairly diverse population. The protocol for the 120 group, the tighter control group, said you need to start with either two or three drug therapy with either a thiazide, an ACE or an ARB, or a calcium channel blocker. So most patients ended up on a thiazide, an ACE or an ARB, and a calcium channel blocker. Those in the 140 group basically were, they took their current medications, switched them to the study formula, which was pretty broad and included most of the drugs that we would commonly use. Patients in the 120 group ended up using an average of three drugs. A quarter were using four or more. Those in the 140 group were using an average of two drugs. So those in the tighter control group basically ended up on about one more drug than those in the 140 group. And they did hit their targets, 121 versus 136. So the study was originally planned to go 5 years, but they stopped it after just over 3 years because they had some favorable interim analyses. The intensive treatment group was less likely to die from any cause, 3.3% versus 4.5%. So if you look at the press release, and this was one of the things that this group was criticized for, was they had a press release a few months before the study was published saying, hey, we have these great results. Look at all this benefit. The press release said 25% reduction in mortality. They didn't give anything else. They didn't talk about the harms. They didn't talk about the absolute risk reductions and so on. So criticized for that, I think, correctly, you know, rather than just waiting until all of the data were published. But So if you look at it, 25% reduction, that's true, from 4.5 to 3.3. That's a 25% relative reduction. Of course, it's only a 1.2% absolute reduction. Number needed to treat is 83 over 3.3 years. Now, that's still pretty good. I'm not knocking that, but that's a better way to present that is, you know, you got to give, put 83 people on this regimen where they take an extra drug, and after 3 years, one more will be alive. So, you know, that's not bad. The NNT for cardiovascular death was 167. For developing heart failure was 125. There was no difference in the likelihood of stroke, MI, or acute coronary syndrome. If they had chronic kidney disease at baseline, there was no difference in the likelihood of progressing. There was a little bit of if you didn't have kidney disease, there was a little bit of a risk of a biochemical sort of increase decrease in your GFR if you were in the 140 group versus 120. I think it's important to point out, unlike the press release, that there were some harms. So serious episodes of hypotension that required medical care occurred more often, number needed a harm of about 100. Syncope occurred more often, number needed a harm of about 70. Electrolyte abnormalities, acute kidney injury, or renal failure, number needed a harm of about 60 or 70. So pretty significant, all more common in the 120 millimeter group. So bottom line, in this group of older patients, the mean age was 68 years, who don't have diabetes but are at high risk of heart disease, using this more aggressive 120 millimeter target did lead to some benefits, but also some harms. Patients in the intensive therapy group took an average of one more drug. I think, you know, this is important information. I think it does need to be put into context. Paul James, who's a family physician, chair, I think, of family medicine at Iowa and head of the JNC 8 panel, you know, will be coming out with a commentary shortly in Annals of Internal Medicine, which will be published by the time this podcast is released, points out some of these issues and says we really ought to individualize care. And I think that makes sense. Somebody who's 80 years old, they're already on four drugs, they're already on, you know, six other drugs for other conditions, you know, they have multiple comorbidities, probably not the best person to try to crank up this intensity. On the other hand, somebody who's 55 or 60, who's, you know, on two drugs, maybe adding a calcium channel blocker after a discussion of the pros and cons would, you know, might make sense. If I had a choice, you know, I think the harms and the benefits are of different magnitudes. I mean, I think the, you know, death on the one hand, preventing a death versus preventing or having an extra trip to the ER because you passed out or were hypotensive or syncopal. I'm pretty sure I know which one I take. And, certainly as I think you have to look at the risk, though, too. I mean, I'm 54 years old. I did my little risk calculation. I take currently, two antihypertensive drugs, have been for a long time. And I thought, well, should I consider this? I'm pretty much healthy otherwise. But my 10-year cardiovascular risk is 5%, not 15%. Mm. And so I think the relative benefit, if you look at the relative benefit of this 25% risk reduction, and these people, after 3 years, about 4% of the entire population had died. So you can imagine, 12 to 15% would have died over on the 10-year period, which fits. My potential number needed to treat would be much higher than that 83 because my risk is lower. So I'm not going to be adding anything anytime soon.
Anyways, thanks, Mark. Very good information. Lots of fodder for us to have conversations with our patients about. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great.
Thanks.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.